going back and reprioritizing some of the stuff you want to get done and resetting your sort of development timelines and just taking a break and doing some of these other alternative projects, I think will help you.
Welcome to the Winning E-Commerce Experience Show, where it's all about creating a brand that your customers love so they keep coming back. This show is brought to you by DataQ. Your store experience begins with your homepage. DataQ improves your conversion rate up to 30% by showing each visitor a personalized homepage based on their interest. And now, your host, Shyam Enver.
Hey guys, welcome to the next episode. Bob is the CTO and co-founder of Yota, an e-commerce optimization company. He brings over 10 years of experience helping online brands significantly improve site performance, resulting in higher conversions and more engaging shopper experiences. Hey Bob, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We were just talking about how crazy the times are. So, you know, you're kind of at home right now and I guess like things have changed quite a bit in the last 2 weeks, huh?
Yeah, I mean, 2 weeks ago, I mean, we're getting ready for the spring season, and now we've been home for 2 weeks. I mean, it's quite a change in a short period of time.
I know, it's I think crazy would just be really understating it.
It's gonna be tough to tell our grandkids about what happened in 2020.
I know, right? I feel that as well. Like when I'm walking down the street, I've been telling my wife this as well. That it's like we're kind of in a historical moment. This is not something that's just going to be, you know, just this one random event. We're actually living through history. It's kind of eerie, but at the same time, it feels like a really important step in our story as like humanity.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, I do think, I mean, with all tragedies, I think the world goes to be a better place. So, I mean, there's always that at the end of it, but I mean, it's definitely tough sitting at home. But the counterpoint to sitting at home is keeping everybody else safe. So that's what I try to tell my family.
Yeah. Do you have kids?
I have two kids. I have a 22-year-old son and a 16-year-old daughter. So.
Okay. I mean, I think the people working at home with like the kids who are like, you know, 5, 6 are probably having another challenge just keeping up with work and having to entertain their kids all day.
Oh man, I can't even imagine. Imagine that.
Yeah, I mean, I love this story. Like I had actually another interview a while ago where he actually did the interview from his car. It was the only way he could get away from his kids and have like a decent conversation without getting interrupted. So that was funny.
Yeah, I was teasing one of the lady at work. So she said she had, I mean, there's two schools of thought that I think people are going to have. Like you're either going to gain a bunch of weight because you're just sitting at home or you're going to lose a bunch of weight. She was one of the person who was losing a bunch of weight, and I told her it was because she was hiding in the closet from her kids all day, so she couldn't eat any snacks.
Wow. Well, hopefully you're losing weight because you're getting some exercise. I don't know. What's it like out there? Like you can go outside, right? In Boston, you can do some exercise.
Yeah, you can go outside for a walk. Like, I mean, I don't think there's a time restriction on being outside.
All right.
I mean, we have a lake in our town, so a lot of people just walk around the lake, and there's just a couple signs that says maintain 6 feet apart. But other than that, I think mostly it's inside for the whole time.
Yeah, and I guess like the thing that's scariest there's a whole bunch of people, I think, you know, very worried, but I think, you know, just the owners of small business are probably having a very unique set of challenges. So before we get into that, I think it would be nice just for the audience to get to know you a little bit. So you want to just walk us through like about Yota and like why you founded it?
Yeah. So I'm the CTO and founder here at Yota. I mean, we've been doing this over 10 years now, trying to help customers with their web performance. Mm-hmm. Before like I started Yota, I worked at another company and we're building like Ajax and Web 2.0 applications. This was like 10 years ago. So just sort of the time when like the Web 2.0 movement was starting to take off, Twitter and Facebook and a lot of the other social platforms.
Like no one says Web 2.0 anymore, right?
I was waiting for someone to say Web 3.0,
but like that never really happened. But sorry, go ahead.
Nope, never happened. And like the term Ajax is pretty much
I know.
That dropped as well. But I mean, we were doing those sort of style applications, really large applications, and we were finding that optimizing the applications for like performance that you would want in a real world sort of online scenario to drive user experience was really hard to achieve. So me and my co-founder at the time started building all these best practices and stuff, and we wrapped mm-hmm. them up into an online service. And that's how we got started with Yoda.
So I mean, I'm curious, like, why Yoda? Like, what's behind the name?
So Yoda is basically 10 to the 24th is a scientific measurement, like Yoda byte is, you know, like petabyte,
gigabyte,
Yoda byte.
So it's kind of like a Yoda Google byte. Kind of inspiration.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's originally spelled like Y-O-T-A, but that domain name was taken. So we had a couple extra characters and keep the same pronunciation.
Oh man, I think that's this problem with a lot of people online have, like, get it. Like, you have this great idea and you've got this great name and you go to Whois and you realize that like every single permutation of it is taken already.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's why you get so, yeah, I mean, I think that's why names get just so crazy, or like all of a sudden, like someone will adopt like a new sort of top level domain will come on like ly or io or something, and then everything will be like that name.io. It's just, there's so few names out there that are available.
Like, you know, when we started DataQue, we actually called it Vizier because we thought that would be a cool name, you know, like kind of an assistant kind of thing. We were really excited mm-hmm. about it. We got the site and we built it. And then somehow when we were Googling, we found that, like, we spelled it with a Z, and then we found that there was another company that spelled it with an S. So it didn't turn up with the initial searches, but then these guys had built so much cred, they were like, all right, damn, so we got to change it now. So, you know, that's when we came up with DataQue. So I feel the pain. Let's put
There's
it
so
way.
Much angst around, like, that, like, when you're starting a company, like, what name you pick. But in reality, it really doesn't matter that much. It's like, it's just we need to call it something, and there's just so much frustration in finding one in the beginning, but at the end it really actually doesn't matter so much.
Yeah, I mean, would you just say it makes sense to just go with whatever you have, and then if you are getting traction, then rename it if you have something better? Like, when you're new, it really doesn't matter at all, right? Like, you could just
I don't think so. I mean, it should be somewhat topical of what your company is. I mean, it doesn't even matter a lot of the times, but just pick a name and like just write it down and just go with it. Like, that's always my idea. Like, yeah. Our original, even like the logo and stuff, like the original scheme, like a funny story from the early days of Yoda is like our original logo was created by a 14-year-old girl in Australia because we used this site called like 99 Designs to create the logo.
Oh, wow.
That logo
amazing.
Lasted us for like 6 years. So, and we paid like $120 for it.
Damn. Did you write to her saying, hey, like, well done, we used your logo for this long?
Yeah, we did. That we actually asked her to like make a website for us, like a design. Oh. She goes, I'm too busy. I have my final exam. So we got the logo from her, and that was basically it.
Oh my god, that is so humbling. So do you guys do a lot of work with e-commerce brands?
Yeah, I mean, our primary industry that we work with is e-commerce nowadays. In the beginning, we had the vision of like sort of selling our software to the whole entire world. Mm-hmm. But what we found was that e-commerce had a real significant tie of like the outcome of the business metrics to performance. And that's what primarily our software does. It really drives the performance and user sure. experience of websites. And your customers in the e-commerce marketplace or industry really get a tangible ROI on that. They do see conversion lift and other benefits in their business metrics. So we primarily sell to e-commerce nowadays.
Yeah, because I like what you said there, because you know, we were doing a very similar analysis. At least with e-commerce, it's unlike say a content website. It's very easy to show the ROI because the site itself is what's converting, and you can see dollar amounts coming at the end of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that we do like an A/B split test for like all of our customers. I mean, that helps them see the metrics and stuff. It really does provide like a good value. And it's not to say that like other industries can't, it's just harder to sort of show that value.
So do you guys focus on specific e-commerce platforms, or how do you guys actually do it?
I mean, the way our system works, you can deploy it via like a JavaScript library, or we have basically like a full optimization acceleration proxy, or CDN. It would be another term that could be used. That can work on any e-commerce platform. So we have customers on Salesforce and Shopify and Magento and across the board.
Okay, so it's pretty agnostic then, because if you're just working, I mean, essentially you're optimizing the front end, right? Like the.
Yeah, absolutely. So we optimize. I mean, there's a few. I mean, we can optimize with our full acceleration service, all the HTML, the CSS, JavaScript, images. So our goal in the beginning was really to make the site indistinguishably better. That was sort of our catchphrase. So if an end user went to the website, they just know that it was better. They wouldn't know that it was any different from the original. They just see that it's better.
But better in the sense of performance, right?
Not in terms of design. Like, it's strictly on the performance side. So if their images were too big or the wrong format, we can basically transcode them. And then what we really found was, as time went on, this was like year zero, like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. But as we moved into the, I don't know, like the 2013, 14, 15 timeframe, was we found that basically a lot of the performance that was problems that were happening on the sites were really related to third-party technologies. And it wasn't so much that the technologies themselves were bad, it was just sort of how they were implemented and the massive amounts of technologies that need to be implemented on today's e-commerce sites.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, you guys, I guess, collect, I mean, you've been in business for a while, so you've been collecting a ton of data on, I guess, traffic and usage and things like that across e-commerce. So, you know, just sort of bringing that back to the topic at hand now of COVID, what have you guys seen the last 2 weeks? Is there anything that's jumped out at you thinking, that I didn't expect that?
Yeah, I mean, actually the one thing that was sort of the biggest change, I think, in traffic was the relative increase of desktop traffic. We typically see, probably 60% of the traffic on mobile typically. Mm-hmm. But when people are working from home, it basically switches back and now it's about even desktop and mobile. So that was a big change, I thought. It was pretty interesting. Relative to the previous.
So you mean
weeks.
It used to be 60-40 and now it's kind of half-half? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. We used to usually see like big increases typically in mobile traffic previous, but now if you look at like the weekday traffic over the last 2 weeks, is basically evenly split between desktop and mobile.
Do you look at anything like splitting that traffic and seeing which ones are converting? Because I think the usual, or at least the philosophy back then, used to be that people would jump on their phone when they're on a commute back home, check out some products, and then go home and potentially buy it. So people were saying, don't ignore mobile, even if the conversion rate's low. But now that this whole thing is changing, maybe the whole journey starts and stops on desktop. Have you seen any data like that?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely seeing that the whole buying process now is sort of on the desktop environments. Mobile traffic being down is, like you said, like it would be up during the day. I think what ends up happening is like people just use their mobile phones at work to like browse like e-commerce sites and then go on and purchase. Yeah. In the past, we typically saw mobile conversion rate, if we looked at it aggregately across all of our sites, about one third of the desktop conversion. So a lot of people would just be buying on desktop. And that was consistent. I mean, you'd see some sites having a higher mobile conversion rate relative to desktop, depending on the demographic that they were targeting. The younger users would typically use the mobile buying experience through the
potentially
whole process.
Average order value, maybe?
We didn't actually see too much in difference in average order value. It was really more on the conversion rate. We saw definitely
right.
Big drop. That's interesting. So yeah, I mean, I think that was another sort of hypothesis I've always wanted to know, which is, you know, if it's a low value enough item, people might be okay with the small screen, but you're saying that it's been far more about the demographic.
I think it's more the demographic than it is the screen. I mean, to be honest, I personally don't like buying stuff on a mobile device. I find it like, it's just not a good experience.
Sure.
But I mean, that's more personal. I'm an older person too, so that might be some of it.
Yeah, and I guess now that everyone's at home, I guess the younger demographic is also potentially spending more time on desktop. And I guess again, comes down to demographics, because I suppose higher income families have far more devices available, whereas maybe others may just have the one or two computers, and pretty much everyone has a phone these days. So maybe there's sort of a change there too.
Yeah, I mean, we typically see the way the traffic flows is now there's a spike that mobile traffic gets to be much higher than desktop traffic about 5 o'clock, as people like sort of log off from work and then they start using their phones more. And then obviously when you're going to bed, you don't carry your desktop, your laptop with you. You sort of browse stuff online at that point on your phone.
Right. And, you know, like, when we're looking at this crisis, one of the things which I've noticed is that the impact to different businesses has actually been quite, I'd say, extreme. So you've got this small percentage of companies that happen to have like this perfect product to fit demand, right? So it's either groceries or like health products and things like that. And they're just seeing an insane growth in traffic and customer demand, and they're having very different issues like supply chain, blah, blah, blah. And then you've got sort of almost like all the rest, which are having, I'd say they've taken a hit on sales, but it just depends on how, you know, closely or how far away from this essential bracket that they are. So I guess in terms of traffic, it's very different when you're on both of these. So maybe we can dive into each of these separately. Like in your customer base, have you seen customers which have this explosion of traffic? And maybe if so, maybe we can talk through like what they've had to do or what advice you have for them to manage that.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely seen in two segments in particular. One is like the home goods. Mm-hmm. We're definitely seeing people who specialize either in products for the household as traffic is way up, or products for medical. We do have some medical products companies, not a lot, but we have seen an increase in traffic for those companies as well. So those two things are the main ones. Obviously, if you're in travel, then it's slightly not good. But for the most part, we've definitely seen the home goods areas and the medical supply stuff up. Now for the traffic, I mean, it gets very spiky. I mean, as they're doing, so you can think about it this way. So if you're going to do like a promotion, mm-hmm. promotional campaign or sale or flash sale, whatever you want to call it, and you send out an email blast, we've typically seen the concentration in which the people get online and answer that call happens in a much tighter space. So the traffic spikes are a little bit higher typically than if people are sort of spread out and commuting to work, because we typically see that those email blasts happen in the morning for the most part. So like a lot of people, you'll see a big spike of traffic in the morning
right.
and it's much more condensed. So that can put pressure on your backend systems. So you just need to be aware that you want to have everything in tip-top shape regarding your servers and infrastructure and everything else before you send out those email blasts.
Right. I mean, so, you know, does your advice change for, say, people who are on managed platforms like, say, Shopify or BigCommerce? Because, you know, the average merchant listening in would say, well, I've never really had to care about that, so why should I do that now? Is there anything else that, like, they should maybe take into account just to, Because, you know, at least with the managed platforms, let me just backtrack a little bit, you don't really mind too much about the backend systems, but you do have to worry about your front end and how quickly it loads. So maybe, you know, just for them, what, is there anything special that you've seen people do to potentially clean up the front end a bit more to keep up with traffic maybe?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely right. I mean, you're not going to, if you're on Shopify, you're not worried about like how many servers you need to deploy. But you do have to worry about double and triple checking that your site and your application is good for that time period. Because you have, like in a normal sale, like if it was spread out over the day and you made like one simple mistake and there was like a broken image, like you have time to recover because not everyone is going to look at it so quickly. But you really want, if you everyone's coming to your website in a very short amount of time, that time that you have to take to recover from failure, whether it's, and it's probably not on the e-commerce platform, but it's probably more localized to you or your campaign or whatever it is, but you want to make sure you double, triple check that before launching that campaign.
Right. Because
the time that you have to accept all of that traffic and get that to convert is much smaller. So just be prepared on that side. And we typically see that a lot with our system. Like one of the things that we track with our system in particular is like size of images and stuff. And so like we'll see like a vendor do like a campaign and all of a sudden they put up like a 5 meg image because super high resolution, and now they run this flash sale and now that everyone has to download a 5 meg image. And even though there's nothing on their servers that are going to fail, it's just a bad user experience that they've wasted that campaign on.
Oh man, if you guys, for everyone listening in, if you take nothing else from this conversation, at least do not do that. Like a 5 meg image is just suicide. I mean, what is the average? Like I think it, what would you say? Like 3-4 megs, 5 megs max for your homepage?
No, like you want your homepage to be under 1.5 megabytes.
Amazing.
Okay, I mean, because remember, you still have mobile traffic. I mean, mobile traffic is still important. So you want that traffic to be as low as possible. That is sort of the thing that we sort of strive for.
Right.
We want all of our customers to have the best optimized website as possible. And 1.5 megabytes is sort of a good, or the top end of what you would want from mobile.
Right. And you know, like going, I think images are definitely, and you know, obviously videos are also very, you know, a big culprit, but then you also have all this JavaScript lying around coming up with, you know, you mentioned third party apps. And this is actually a question we get quite a lot from customers who are looking into installing DataQ. They're always saying, okay, like how do you affect my, you know, website speed? So we know this is sort of a question at the top of everyone's minds. Maybe you can just talk us through a little bit about that, because you featured that quite heavily on your site about how you help with third-party apps. Have you seen, or maybe any sort of advice you have for people on how to actually go about looking at which apps are affecting their site speed the most and what they could do about it?
Yeah, I mean, we have this product called Rapid Control, and that really is the whole centerpiece of the functionality, is how to manage and prioritize the third-party content. So there's two schools of thought on this. One is like a budgeting aspect, mm-hmm. where basically, okay, I want to put my site on a budget. Well, I particularly don't think that's realistic. Like budgets in real life sometimes work, and if you're a good budgeting person, that works exceptionally well. But for like the 95% of the people who aren't good at budgeting, then budgets don't really work.
But by budget, are you talking about a time budget in terms of delay? Or are you talking about a financial budget in terms of cost?
No, a time budget. So like how much, the time budgets I don't think work. So we take a different approach on like more of a prioritization of the third parties. We think all the third parties are super important, but the way in which they should be applied to the website and the way they should be instantiated is different. And a perfect example of this is like a chat widget. Mm-hmm. So if you think about a user coming to a website, the primary content that the user wants to consume is the content that's supplied by by our customer, whether it like any number of the customers that we have.
Absolutely.
Right. That is the primary content, is the image, it's the options, it's the description, it's the alternative image, it's like 3D views or whatever. Like that's a primary content that helps the buyer go through that purchasing experience.
Right.
So we want that content to show up on the website as fast as possible to engage the user right away. Mm-hmm. Other content that is sort of supplements that experience to help the customer sort of go through like alternative transaction process. Like I want to go in, I want to research reviews, or I want to like personalization, like is another good example. Like that content isn't necessarily the first thing the user is going to engage with, but it's super important. Like if that image or that product isn't the one that they want, the personalization that helps bring in the other content and other products that might engage the user is mm-hmm. so important, mm-hmm. but it's not the first thing. So we want to basically create this sort of prioritized experience for our customers where first party content is super important, then bring in the reviews and personalization that customers crave to make that alternative decision, and then bring in some of these other supplemental things that are sort of alternatives to like the last resort, like chat, for an example. Like the first thing that users don't do on the website is click the chat button. They look at the pictures and then may down the line at click the chat button. That shouldn't, if that's first on the website, then you have a high opportunity for a poor user experience and for really no reason. So right. Our message is really go through a prioritization process with all of your third parties and which ones are really super important. And then our product really helps implement that prioritization.
So, I mean, that sounds like a very advanced solution and I think it sounds really appealing. So, you know, do you have any advice or approaches for say smaller merchants who maybe don't have too much budget and just want to see, they've maybe just got this one developer who they can use and they're just trying to have maybe a more rudimentary form of this prioritization? Like do you have any tips for like a developer who's working on a site to say, hey, like here's how I would do it. Maybe if there's a chat, can you delay the JavaScript loading? Anything like that you've done?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for all of the great things about our product, it really helps customers simplify the implementation of this. I mean, there is things that customers can do on their own. Mm-hmm. One, really understand what's on your third. I mean, one of the things that we've seen, just to be honest, that and we can help customers clean this up, and it really, I mean, we do it, but like it's not really anything of an advantage of our product, mm-hmm. is that just take like an audit of what's on your website. Yes. There's a lot in, because so many people have access to customers' websites now, it's not only just the tech people, but the marketing people through the tag manager and other people have access to an agency that's helping you, right? Have access to put services on your website. Yeah. Just take an audit and make sure that all of those services are being used. Like one of the, I mean, probably, I don't know, 2 times out of every 10 customer engagements, we find like a couple services on the website that are slowing it down significantly. And we ask about them and they're like, oh, I don't even use that anymore. Well, that could save you just a second improvement if you just take that off. So that's one thing, just be aware of that. And run some, just understand what's on the website. And we have a free tool as part of our thing that basically does like an automated audit of that. But you can do that on your own with your tag manager or just running some website tests and stuff.
What's the URL of the free tool you have? I think that could be interesting for anyone listening in.
Yeah, if you just go to like Rapid or Yota.com, then you'll there's a free evaluation that you can go on to the website and sign up for, and we'll let you do it for free.
I think that's a great point about doing sort of a checkpoint or just a quick check. How often would you recommend this? Say like every month, just spend say 10 minutes and have a quick look at the, say on Shopify, you can easily see all the apps you've got, or you could probably run something on Chrome, you know, through the page audit. How often would you recommend someone do this?
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend at least once a month. I mean, typically what we'll do with our customers is like right before the holidays, we'll run through a very strict audit of every one of our customers' websites just to get all the things that they don't really use anymore off the website and just get that final tune-up for the holiday season. But that audit we typically will help our customers with every month. But you really want to do that sort of on your own and just take understanding of what's on your website. It's just good practical knowledge. Like, as a tech person, I really want to know what's involved. What are all the pieces of my system, right? And for your website, is sort of like your product. You want to really just know all the pieces that are going on. And not only is there performance risk, but there's obviously security risks that are involved with having just things on your website as well. So you want to reduce those.
Yeah, especially with everyone is, I think, quite rightly so, a lot more worried about privacy and data use than they were, say, a couple of years ago, right? So Zoom just got in trouble recently because they had a Facebook SDK lying around that they didn't even like think about too much. And they just made it to the front page of quite a lot of media outlets.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's a perfect example. Like they could have just easily done an audit and said, like, we don't use that anymore. Take that out of there. But like those are the things, like if you don't do that auditing process or is not part of your sort of best practices and mindset, then you could go like weeks and or years without doing an audit. And that's just far too long. So you do want to do it periodically, probably once a month.
Sure. So let's talk about that other group for a second. Maybe more than a second. The group where they're probably seeing a reduction in traffic right now. I guess you'd still argue that they should still care about their website speed, right? Would you alter your advice at all for these guys? Because I guess they also have a problem of prioritization.
Yeah, all of the e-commerce companies out there, whether you're seeing an increase or a decrease. On the decrease side, I do think that'll be sort of short-lived. Like we were talking about earlier before we got online, I think the recovery from this will be pretty swift. I think that is good for the e-commerce marketplace or market and just general economy. But I think now with the lull, there's two things. You sort of have a lot of people working at home. It is a good time to do some alternative projects because maybe some of the big projects that you wanted to get done this year may be interrupted or delayed because obviously when people are working from home and there's global pandemic going on, like productivity may not be at the top. Pick some smaller projects and some of these audits and other things that clean up your website.
Sure.
May be a good way to like take a break. You know what I
mean? Oh, I see.
When you think about like the way I think about it as like the business owner here at Yoda is in a global pandemic and like with lots of people under stress, but you don't want to put more stress on people. So if you can go down and a lot of things like internal to your organization are like technical debt that cause slowness. It could be a good time to just, okay, take a break. We're going to go through like this burn down of technical debt, go through cleanup. Let's reset and recalibrate how we're going to work over the next month or so, and then go back into your bigger projects. If you just try to push through the bigger projects while everyone's working home and remote, that could cause some just general issues in the time frame because everybody in e-commerce has a deadline. And that is probably for most people, that is October 31st. October 31st. So we're always working on a 10-month schedule in e-commerce, which I think most people don't understand. We have to do basically 10 months of engineering or 12 months of engineering in 10 months time. Now you have like this other issue going on, like you know you're going to have less time to do that. So I think going back and reprioritizing some of the stuff you want to get done and resetting your sort of development timelines and just taking a break and doing some of these other alternative projects, I think will help you.
I like that. I like that a lot. It's a very positive way of looking at it because what you're saying is, hey, if you've suddenly got huge spikes of traffic, well, then you have to work on this. But if you don't and you don't really have too much to work on right now, it's just one of those feel good and useful things to do to improve your site because you kind of have to do it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And it gives people good motivation and it's easier. You know, like anytime that I'm doing something and I feel stuck or like stressed out about something, I'll just take a step back, maybe walk around the lake, come back, do some simple tasks.
6 feet apart.
Yeah, exactly. 6 feet apart. Come back and then do the do a couple simple tasks to like get me back into the motion. And I think that works well for organizations as also. Like people in organization, I think, are pretty much the same in how they interact. So taking that step back, doing some technical debt, I think at this point would be a good idea for people.
Cool. Have you, I mean, you know, just on this topic of people dealing with this pandemic, have you, like, among your customers, have you seen any interesting examples of how some of them have reacted? Have they done any changes to their strategy or anything like that that you thought is was an inspiring story? Sorry if I'm putting you on the spot.
No, I mean, I definitely have. I mean, one of our customers, are donating money, donating time and stuff. I think that is definitely good. Mm-hmm. And I think our customers in general have been, e-commerce is a little bit different. Like there's a couple, I mean, there's two segments of e-commerce really. There's the e-tailers, the people who just never had a store, right? Mm-hmm. That's one segment. And I think for them, the transition to working from home is much easier because everything was sort of, they're primarily a tech company selling products. Sure. For the most part. But then you have another one of our large segment of customers are the sort of traditional brick and mortars or manufacturers where they really haven't had a culture of working from home. And one of the great things I've seen is that transition very quickly to allowing the people to work from home, particularly in the e-commerce parts and departments of their companies. And that, I think, has worked exceptionally well. And there's a lot of people doing that and maintaining a good sort of productivity level. I think that's going to help their organizations overall in the long run. That the work from home culture, I think, is one of the things that will be enhanced out of this pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just overall good for the whole entire world, that more people have the opportunity to work at home, less traffic, less pollution.
Oh my gosh.
General just good well-being of humanity, not to sit in your car for an hour or 2 hours a day.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that, you know, you mentioned how the recovery will be quick. You know, I've got my fingers crossed. I really hope so. But that the world at the end of that line is going to be very different to the one we inherited just before this crisis struck, right? And, you know, one of the things is definitely the work from home thing. But I think another thing that's definitely going to be the case is that a lot more businesses are going to go online. It's almost like they have to right now. Are you seeing anything like that with Yoda? I guess you guys work with more established merchants, but I don't know if you're seeing any data at all about like much more brick and mortar stores suddenly getting online and wanting to sell there because they have no choice.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely are seeing an increase in particular, like one of the areas that we saw an increase in not only was the home goods and the medical supply, but people who have brick and mortars have seen a more of an increase in their online traffic as well. Not across the board. I mean, there are some luxury brands who aren't doing as well. So I don't want to say everyone's doing awesome, but we do see some brick and mortar stores that are seeing an increase in traffic. And it's for them, it's really going to be how can they manage their inventory, because these companies have large inventories, obviously they have stores. So how are they going to be able to, and one of the things that we're hearing is like, how are they going to get that inventory out of the stores in the hands of the customers?
Yeah. Oh, even the supply chain, right? Like getting the inventory to the warehouse too, that seems to be a problem too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's going to, I think, be the long pole in this tent, is getting that supply chain back up and running and getting inventories full. I mean, there's companies out there like Amazon and Flipkart and Alibaba who have just like massive amounts of supply chain capabilities. But for the smaller merchants and stuff, I think that'll be much more of a challenge.
Yeah, but I think overall a pretty positive outlook that you have. I think it's a refreshing take from all the negativity that I've been seeing, at least online.
I tend to stay away from all the negativity online. So, I mean, that might be why. I mean,
that's good.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not a good situation for anyone, but I mean, I think the best thing that we can do is learn from this and put in place things that, for one, shorten this issue down and manage it much more effectively going forward. And then also just putting things in place that don't allow this to happen again. But for like everybody, like for businesses and stuff, I mean, I think, like I said, the recovery will be pretty quick, depending on like how governments handle this situation at the end or as we go through it. But I mean, look, the world was actually in a pretty good spot beforehand. I mean, there was a lot of people making pretty good money online, and I think that'll continue. This will definitely help push more people online, but then you have the macroeconomics of like the demand side obviously will be hurt in the near term, but I think that'll get recovered pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I think in the meantime, you've given our listeners some very clear advice on what they could be doing to improve their website performance. So thank you very much, Bob.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks a lot for having me on.
Yeah, and like if I'm sure people might have some additional questions on how to get this, because everybody has a sort of a special sort of a question on their site. Like, how would you recommend people get in touch with you?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to email me, just go ahead, just email me at bbuffone@yoda.com. I'm also on Twitter at Rockstar Apps. I've had that handle for a long time. I've never switched it over to my name. I mean, there's always everyone had an interesting handle in the beginning. Yeah. And then as Twitter matured, everyone sort of switched it to their names. Boring. I just decided not to do that, so I've just left it at that.
Oh, well done. So you're one of the holdouts. You're still...
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant. So how is Twitter, actually? You're not the first person to tell me about getting on the Twitter e-commerce space. You know, I don't think we're doing too much on it. Like, are you quite active? Is that not like a big e-commerce community?
No, I'm not active at all. Like, we use it more for, like, marketing stuff. I have a lot of personal opinions on Twitter, but like that'd probably take up another podcast.
Yeah. Let's do that after the show. But hey, thanks a lot, Bob. It's been a pleasure having you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
You're still here, which means you definitely enjoyed that conversation. This is a special COVID-19 e-commerce miniseries to help small business merchants out there get prepared. We're doing a lot more of these, so be the first to know whenever there's a new episode. Just follow DataCue, that's DataCue, on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn. Stay safe out there, everybody. Till next time, this is Sharam